Welcome to the Minute Maid Gang Podcast, episode 295. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens.
I'm here.
And Phil Wilson.
Jello.
How are you guys doing this morning?
Great, thank you.
Graham, are your arms tired?
Recovering. Oh, yeah, my arms, my everything is tired. Yeah. CES is an experience that requires recovery, you know, and I, after 3 years in a row, you know, I don't know that I can do this again. I didn't try to walk all over the place and cover everything. I didn't have time to. I was there representing a client, but you know, it still takes a lot out of you. That's for sure.
Yeah. We'll get to that when we jump into the other top stories, and because we'd love to hear, you know, what your take was on it. There's some other things we can touch on, but should we dive into the Minnesota stories?
You bet.
This
Head
one,
first, buddy.
This
Head
one
first.
Came across my radar this morning. I don't know why I missed this, but there's a Republic.
you're not on the list for these sorts of things.
I'm not on the list. Yeah, they only email it to the tinfoil hat guys.
I was going to say.
Yeah. So Senator Brandon Peterson, who's a Republican from District 35, introduced a bill in Minnesota that would ban the warrantless capture of any data, basically. And one site called 10th Amendment Center said it would ban the NSA activity called the biggest threat since the Civil War. And essentially what it is anything that's warrantless, you know, all the metadata collection and so on and so forth would be illegal in Minnesota. The only exceptions would be, you know, life-threatening emergencies, lost or stolen phone, you know, things of that nature. But there's so much activity that's going on where all this data being collected is being surreptitiously handed off to the side to law enforcement agencies and then providing them access to stuff. And it's being used in criminal investigations and in court. But then when the data collection is, you know, the defense requests the information, then they say, no, you can't give it to you. It's classified. And so, you know, essentially this bill would make that practice, all of that illegal. So pretty interesting stuff.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with that.
It'll be interesting to see what happens.
I applaud the effort, but I'm not optimistic on the results, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll be surprised.
Well, it's like Utah. It's saying that they were going to cut off water to the NSA facility unless they stopped the warrantless capture of all this data. And I thought, yeah, that's going to go over well.
So,
oh my gosh.
Electricity would be better, but they're probably generating their own.
Yeah, probably.
Magic. So.
Probably. So who stuck the story in here about this teen's computer privacy tussle with his Wyzetta school goes viral?
I did. I saw it on Boing Boing before Christmas, and I just noticed this at the on the MinPost this week.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty interesting. Why don't you give her a quick recap?
Well, this kid, Nathan Ringo, great name, by the way.
I know.
Who apparently is a budding lawyer, actually read the user agreement before.
And read it out loud.
Before he got his iPad at the beginning of the school year. And of course he was kicked off. And it brings up some good issues because he's entitled to the content, but he's blocked for actually, you know, questioning whether or not he should sign this thing, which basically gives away all the rights to privacy. So,
well, and they cut him off from the internet and from his Google Apps account for the school. But I would encourage everybody to actually go through and read the comments, because one of the things that when this thing first came out is I said, wait a minute, you don't have to have a credit card to have an iTunes account. So a whole bunch of people pointed that out in the comments.
Yeah.
That it doesn't require a credit card. And there's some other stuff that's factually
questionable in
the article. But
you can't get any apps. So the only reason you would sign up for an iTunes account with an iPad is to get apps, and many of them can be free, right? Most of them, a lot of them are.
Yeah.
But you still need to input your credit card if you're going to get even free apps.
Yeah.
Right. And so it is a point, but you can sign up and get access. You just can't download anything until you stick a credit card in there.
Well, it was my understanding that anything that is sanctioned by the school and is made available in the Apple education program.
Oh, you have access.
You have access to all of those. But it, yeah, if you wanted to download a Wikipedia app that was free, you'd have to have an iTunes account with a credit card.
Well, I'm not exactly sure why Zeta doesn't preload all of their school-sanctioned iPads. It's a little bit different when you're talking about a bring-your-own-device concept, but I'm not exactly sure why, they would have to say, yeah, you have to access the App Store, because that does open up a big can of worms.
Well, yeah, and what's interesting is you're doing this for Lakeville. You're on the school board, yeah. Right?
And all of those terms district of service technology. Are all those terms of service are required by law. So I mean, it really does come down to, there's always a good reason to question. There's always a good reason to push the envelope. There's always a good reason to say, hey, why do I have to sign this? But the fact of the matter is, it is a school district supplied tool, and you have to abide by the tools that are given to you. Yeah. And it's like you don't use your work computer for personal stuff if you don't want to have work basically come in and say, hey, we need to look at everything on your computer. That's
absolutely,
that's kind of the way it is. And the question becomes, if a student chooses not to use a school supplied laptop, what are the limitations of their own device? It's a question that we always talk about when we talk about our BYOD policy here in Lakeville. It's a challenge, because you say, okay, well, you can bring your own device, and we basically open up all of these opportunities for you to use that device for whether it's questionable material or whatever. So,
well, the question I had on this was, if as a teenager, and assuming he's under 18, and he's a junior, so he's 16 or 17. Does he have rights for privacy? And I haven't been able to find it, because I know that children have different rights, but they're very basic, like, just being entitled to a good environment and health, health and, basic human rights. But I don't know about internet privacy to begin with.
It's interesting. I hadn't really thought about it that way.
So why would they even ask him to sign some waiver? I this doesn't make sense to me.
Well, it's probably something that's mandated by the state.
It's optional.
Is it?
Yeah, the signing of that is optional.
Okay.
So what? They're not forced to sign it. They have to, but they can't use the equipment.
But then you don't get the gear. Yeah.
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 Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And the problem with bring your own device, because I was talking to a buddy of mine who's in Indiana, who does the same thing that you do, Phil, which is work in the district as a parent technology advisor, or there's some board that they've got. And everybody's excited about that new HP Stream, the $199 Windows laptop that HP's making. Mm-hmm. And then they just introduced, I think at CES, a $179 little hockey puck sized PC that run Windows 8. And they're all excited about that too, because they can buy cheap displays and keyboards and mice. The point is that they disallow any bring your own laptop to school, because they don't want anybody hanging anything on the network that might have malware in it.
What would be interesting to do is to have one of the Lakeville, some of the folks from the Lakeville School District, whether it's Dr. Snyder or from the technology lead there, to have to join us on the podcast and talk a little bit about it.
Yeah, that could be cool.
The bring your own device thing has actually worked out very well in a couple of pilot programs that we have going here in the district. So we just implemented it this year, I believe, and as a pilot in two schools. And it would be interesting to get a good checkup on that. Yeah. So yeah, we ought to talk about that.
So the Strib had an article about Coco, and it looks, Phil, like they're going to stick around for a while.
Yeah, it looks like it, doesn't it? They may be onto something here. Yeah, they're celebrating their fifth year. And they actually celebrated a little bit of their fifth year by dusting off a video we did with them 5 years ago, talking about co-working when they first started the St. Paul location. So you can check that out online if you want to take a look at me and my...
And where's that? Where, on their site?
Yeah, you can go to the Coco blog and see it.
Okay.
But there was a little holiday party and fifth year celebration last night at the Coco in Uptown. So fun and frivolity was had by all. Did you go to that at all, Graham? I got there late. So
no, wasn't even aware of it.
Oh, you got to get out more, dude.
And I'm a Coco member.
I know.
So I know. Huh. I've been a little busy though.
Yes, it's true. Yeah, it's no. It was no Vegas. I can tell you that it was no Vegas.
Well, thank God for that.
But it's a lot of fun, and you know they've got what now, four locations, including Fargo. And I was talking to Tiamo, who's their operations manager, and said that things are starting to pick up in Fargo, so they're feeling good about that. And there, I know that Don and Kyle are looking at other places. In the state and out of the state.
I like the way Adam Bell's story listed the graduates and the ones that have received funding. That's a good list.
Yeah, that's interesting. Couldn't you do that list though for the entire city? I mean, there's a lot of companies out there that are receiving or being successful that aren't on the Coco trading floor. But that's not to take away from some of the success that has come out of that space. Well, that is a great space. And you know, it's difficult to think about not being in that Coco space, but you know, when you look at what you have to do to grow, you know, once you get above 10 people, it becomes unwieldy to be at Coco. It's difficult because of available space, available meeting room and that sort of thing. And Kyle and Don are very much aware of that. They've got some things planned. I think that, and I don't know how public they are. So I know that they've got some things planned for companies up to about 20 or 25. So, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how things grow there.
Yeah. On that list, Graham, there was one, I haven't heard of before called Hyper Ick.
Hyper Ick.
Acquired by BoozFed. BuzzFeed. That's right.
BoozFed. Probably not too far from the truth.
Booze fueled.
Yeah.
It's really interesting because I was out for I was off Thursday because I wasn't feeling well, so I didn't go into the office and ended up working at home. And I got in there yesterday morning, and we have the we were renting the campsite next to us for a couple of months as we kind of transition from our own team to bringing in BuzzFeeders as they're hired and relocate to Minneapolis. And so they had taken down the wall between it, and it was like, wow, it's really big in here now. And I got to tell you, it was a little sad. It's just like, well, you know, we're kind of becoming BuzzFeed now. So, but it's a lot of fun. I can't tell you what a difference that space has made to me personally, and it made to my business and our business, you know, because it became somebody else's business, my business, and then our business with partners. And it, you know, Coco was part of that whole process. And it really is an amazing space, and there are really some amazing people there.
Yes, indeed.
Well, so you're probably watching Phil, and you for sure, Tim, and then Graham and I are just on the side here using them. But the whole mobile app thing is continuing to move forward, and Target has hit some mobile milestones.
They have. They've announced this week that 60% of the traffic at Target.com, the website, not the mobile app, is coming from mobile devices like smartphones and tablets.
Yep. That's incredible.
Which is a huge increase. But as the story said, this is in line with kind of what's happening in retail right now.
Yeah.
So this is not unusual. And it did point out that Target is in the lead in innovating with their mobile offerings, and they list a laundry list of things that they did in the past year.
Yep, so yep.
Many of which we've talked about.
Right. Well, I'm going to touch on something a little bit later on in a little segment, a security segment, but
what?
This whole thing with mobile and omnichannel.
The horse is back?
Well, just keep your pants on there, pal.
Oh, okay.
Right. keep your horse in the barn there, dude.
Yeah, zip up the barn door. You know, the tough part here has got to be for Target. If you know, Tim Elliott is looking at something on his phone and he's searching, and then you walk into your home office and sit down at the computer and log on and buy that way. How do I know who it is? How do I know if that mobile experience has translated to you making a buying decision and then actually going out and buying?
Well, there's this guy named Mark Andreessen, which came up with this thing back in the 90s.
Yeah.
I forgot what it's called. It was called the Super Cookie, I believe.
It's called the Brownie.
Oh. It was called the Brownie.
Yeah. Oh. All right. Well, let's touch on that later. All right.
I know the answer. I know the answer.
Oh, my God.
I had a great conversation yesterday with Katie Thayer, who is a project manager or product manager at Target. She's doing a lot of mobile work, and we're on the board together at Technovation MN. And we were just talking about the things that Target has done, and boy, she's done some really great stuff over there, and that team has done some really great stuff, and it's very impressive to see what's going on at Target. I'm glad that they're you know, doing their best to grow in the mobile space. And it's taking a little heat off them from the security side too, a little bit. I think that sort of deflected that spotlight that was on them for so long. So.
Well, you know, they're actually doing some really interesting things. Cause my wife, as you know, used to be a buyer at Target years ago, and she's really,
my wife still is a buyer at Target. She goes in there.
Yeah, different kind. Okay. Oh, but anyway, but the Target's doing some interesting things where they just signed up a new designer. You know, remember how they did Michael Graves for a while? There's a new designer they're taking on that does a lot of really innovative designs, and you know, they're doing a lot of the blocking and tackling stuff that they used to do. And I think Target's pendulum is swinging back pretty hard and pretty fast. Yeah,
who is that designer now that they're using throughout the store? Because I think we've got their shower curtain, his shower curtain. Is it Robert somebody, or I don't remember.
The toilet brush is worth a look too.
It is.
I'm kidding. Truly is. I don't know.
It's ergonomically designed.
Lilly Pulitzer.
Now,
for Target collaboration announced for spring arrival.
Oh, okay. No, that's not.
She's the one. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go.
So
cheap chic. Cheap chic, baby.
Yeah. Well, she's got really fun, bright, airy designs. And
listen to you.
Yeah,
my goodness. Listen to you.
I'm just echoing my wife.
I think it's like, you know, it's like, oh, well, this is how Steve learns his living. He's just, you know, saying things like light and airy.
Light and airy.
I know. Steve wearing light and airy.
I do.
We don't talk a lot about what Steve does as far as, you know, with his wife's firm and what they do. And he does, he can come up with some pretty damn flowery language. I can tell you
as
that.
As long as you don't ask me boxers or briefs, I'm fine.
Oh, I'm not going to ask that.
Yeah, right.
So you're more of a commando guy. I know.
No. Nah. No, maybe in my younger days.
We've kept, you know, Graham all bottled up. We need to know what happened in Vegas. I know you're going to say what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, but for CES, you can make an exception, can you not?
Oh, well, yes. I mean, it was crazy, as it always is. I mean, what do you say about CES? You know, so many people trash it every year, and, you know, they're announcing all over social media, so happy I'm not at CES. You know?
Really?
But, oh, yeah, you see it all the time because, you know, it has this reputation of just being a complete mob and horrible experience, crowded, long cab lines and everything. Oh, but people still go there, and CES, the organization, CE.org, does a pretty damn good job. I mean, it is an amazing, amazing logistical, you know, event to pull off. And my hat always goes off to them. Gary Shapiro, the head dude, you know, talks about it. Has done some great interviews about what it means to the industry, and you know, people still want to get together. You know, I mean, you can read about all this stuff online. You know, so all of you out there who didn't go, there are so many great recaps. You wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, we'll put a bunch of them in the show notes.
Yeah. Yeah, and I specifically am going to put one in from a guy at The Guardian, 25 new products and technologies worth talking about. So, no, you don't have to be there to discover all this. But being there, you always run into people, and there's a lot of serendipitous kind of stuff. You know, I was out there supporting a client, so I didn't have, you know, the ability to quote unquote cover the show. No one person can cover the show. I ran into somebody from Minneapolis on my return flight on Wednesday, and he was surprised that I didn't get to the Sands, you know, where all the startup stuff was. And I said, well, you know, if I was just here on my own, I might have done that. But I spent most of the time at North Hall, which is one of the biggies, and supporting my client Patchworks, which Julio was nice enough to mention in his pre-story, but anyway, we had a lot of success getting them a lot of attention. But I got to see all the big car booths at the North Hall, which is pretty amazing right there. I mean, Mercedes and Audi and VW and Ford had huge, you know, connected car booths. And I did catch the VW press conference and wrote about that on my blog. And
boy, I would love to have been there and seen that BMW with the gull wing doors.
There you go.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
A lot of hype about connected cars. But, you know, I read where before we see these self-driving cars, it might be really 10 years, you know, I mean, but there's still a lot of talk about it. The Mercedes thing, where, you know, the four people in the car sit facing each other, conference style. I mean, how long is it going to be before that really hits the roads? You know, I mean, come on. But the concept.
Or hits another car. One of the two.
Yeah, or hits another. Yeah, but.
Here's George Jetson.
But yeah, it's Jetson time, yeah. You know, I mean, but so there was a lot of hype about that, a ton of hype about IoT. I mean, Steve would have been in nirvana, you know. And but Steve, you read all about it on the web, right? You knew what was coming. Well, you know all about smart things.
Not only that, but I watched live the CES keynote by the Samsung CEO.
Yep. Alex Hawkinson.
Alex Hawkinson from Smart Things was up. You know, he was talking about the new hub and so forth. But boy, I got to tell you, the Samsung keynote was probably one of the most boring things I've ever seen.
Yes.
I mean, it was, I swear to God, it was like explaining Internet of Things to your grandmother.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's this, and it's the biggest thing, and oh, look at here, you can have your refrigerator talk to you. It's like, oh, yeah. Please.
Oh, my God.
You know, it felt a lot like, not to go off on a tangent, but it felt a lot like back in the day when personal computers came out, the killer app was recipes. Remember that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or you can put a woman can put her recipes on and have the computer in the kitchen. It's like, oh, please, if I see that one more time, I'm going to jump off a bridge. I mean, it just, oh, man.
The hype is just crazy, you know, but SmartThings announced their 2.0 hub, the one that can be offline, right?
Correct.
And that's kind of a biggie.
I'm buying one in a second.
Yeah, and they weren't the only ones that did that. I mean, there's so many hubs and new things. I sent you an Israeli startup that I ran into called SwitchBee. I don't know what they're doing that's different, but everybody's got an angle on this smart home thing. I'm just not convinced that everybody wants it yet, kind of like Tim. You know, I'm kind of in his camp. It's like, okay, all this is wonderful, but just because you can do it, does that mean there are people that are going to do it? You know, I mean, there's so much of that at CES and so many little feature kind of products that, you know, one guy told me, you know, somebody's got an app that projects the time from your iPhone up on the ceiling. so you don't have to roll over and tilt your phone. And it's like, okay, is that a fundable startup?
Yeah.
You know, no, yeah. I don't think so. You know, so there's just a lot of stuff like that. But anyway, read the recap stories, and the one from The Guardian I thought was particularly good.
So well, there's one technology you saw, Graham, that I'd really like to hear about.
Yes.
Neil Young's Pono player.
That's exactly what I want to hear about too.
How does it sound?
Your one cool thing, or is you want to?
Leave it for the cool thing.
Let's leave it for the cool thing.
You want to save it for then? I was lucky enough to be able to actually get to their booth at Showstopper's press event, and so I'll talk about it. Yeah, wonderful.
Good. All right.
See, look at this. We're teasing ahead. It's like we know what we're doing here in the podcast.
Well, it's about time because we have our freaking radio guy on with us, and you know,
you guys just never listened to
me. Could have been a coach and a guide, but you know,
no.
Well, there's one thing that we didn't talk about though, which I think is significant, which is this Dish Sling TV thing.
Yes. Oh, you're right.
It's an over-the-top cable TV service, including sports from ESPN. I mean, this is crazy time.
It is, but and I did not do a huge analysis on this, but one of the things that happened was they broke down the cost of, you know, signing up for the HBO Go app separately and streaming, you know, different quote unquote networks like FX and whatever, and you'd end up spending more than you would if you just got a cable subscription.
Yeah, but this particular product is, you know, tuned for not only watching on your Roku or Apple TV or whatever, but also on your mobile device, which you really can't. It's hard to do.
It is
today because, at least here in Charter land that Phil and I live in, not all of those mobile apps can be authorized to watch stuff. You can't see ESPN, but you can't see some other ones. So it's very confusing to a consumer, especially those of us that are fairly sophisticated. So I really like this interface where it's a bunch of channels that are cable channels, and I can watch it on a tablet or a smartphone, and you don't have to go through a lot of rigmarole. You basically authenticate once and you get all the channels, as opposed to having, you know, 15 apps to do each channel on its own.
Yeah, I like the fact that they did that federated single sign-on for all the apps. That was really cool. Because you're right. I mean, that's one of the things that I do, in fact, detest is, you know, I open up the FX app and I have to go to a website to activate the app and plug in a code and, you know, yada, yada. Well, I have to do that on three different Apple TVs. It's like, you know, what a pain in the butt.
Yep. So, and then on some of them, they only let you authenticate to an unlimited number. So you might run out
if you
put it on your iPhone and iPad and then a few Apple TVs. You may actually run out of authentication.
Well, I had to step up to the Netflix, I don't know, what is it, the 7 device level?
The family plan.
Family plan. So it's like, I don't know, $11 a month or $12 a month or something. Cause it was all of a sudden I was gonna, my wife was out of town. I was going to watch a movie and it turns out she was watching Netflix in her hotel and the kids are each watching Netflix and somebody had it open on two devices and we didn't know who, cause we were text messaging back and forth and I couldn't watch a movie. I had it all queued up. You know, I was going to watch this thing. It says, sorry, you have too many devices running. It's like, oh, man. So I had to upgrade right then. But
sad trombone for Steve.
I know. Yeah, talk about a first world problem. My God. But hey, exciting Comcast news. Speaking of streaming, because faster speeds means someday we maybe can stream 4K video. But Comcast is going to sell gigabit cable service this year. Because Broadcom announced a chip that'll power gigabit per second internet service. And then DOCSIS 3.1, which is the newest version that you were talking about 2 weeks ago, Tim.
And was it last week?
Or maybe, yeah.
But the bad news is you've got your own router, right? You're not using the Comcast router?
Yeah, but it was $50 or $80. So I can just
Okay, well, you're going to have to buy one. You're going to have to buy another one.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, but it'll give you super fast speeds. 3 gigabits I think is the what they're talking about here in the articles that I've read.
Right. Well, that's, you know, theoretical throughput, but what I did see was it said Comcast's fastest residential service today is 505 megabits per second downstream and 100 megabits per second upstream. And I thought, holy buckets, I'm paying $129 a month for 75 down and 20 up. I can only imagine what that costs. You know,
it's not available in every market. In fact, I don't think it's available here.
Okay.
Yeah. I think the it tops out at like 150 gigs here.
Yeah.
But, you know, this will be 1 gigabit probably in the metro later in the year as soon as this new technology rolls out and they roll out DOCSIS 3.1.
Wow. That's going to be awesome.
I'll tell you, I sure need to upgrade here in Bloomington. I'm getting like 11 and 6. And, you know, the guy that moved in next door to me did the whole Xfinity home thing. And I think he's sucking up a lot of our neighborhood bandwidth in the cul-de-sac here.
Oh, really?
So I got to do something. And then I even gave thought to CenturyLink, who came knocking on my door on like the day after Christmas when it was like 10 below wind chills or something, trying to sell me CenturyLink.
Yep.
You know, ready to come to your house, you know, and like replace cable. And it's like, I don't have time to talk about it right now, dude, but he wanted to sign me up right there.
Well, they're a third party because CenturyLink has none of their own salespeople.
And he was just some guy out trying to make a buck, you know. Yeah.
Well, they came to my door too and did the same thing. And I just, the theoretical throughput or theoretical down was 40 megabits per second. And I just said, well, what about fiber? Because there's fiber, you know, a few thousand feet away from here. I know right where the box is. I can show it to you. And
he didn't have an answer.
They're not doing. Yeah, they're not doing fiber out here in Eden Prairie. So it's like, why bother?
Yeah. But, I don't think.
Well, you are out in the sticks.
Yeah, and there's no money out here at all. I mean, people don't have any disposable income.
None.
So I don't know how we could possibly afford to pay any more for internet. But other than that, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I got to look at upgrading with Comcast somehow. So,
yeah. So you don't have a dial-up modem anymore? Or?
No, I gave that up last week.
You did? Okay. No, it was a haze. It was a haze.
9600 baht. Right?
Exactly.
No, I've had the Comcast for a long, long time. It just isn't fast enough for me anymore. And I, you know. When you're doing so much with Netflix and Slingbox and every other darn thing, and we got the new Genie system with DirecTV, which is awesome, you know, to have 5 tuner channels. You're going to be recording 5 different things at a time, you know, and, you know, it's just more and more bandwidth. I want more.
Well, what I'd love to do is I'd love to show my daughter's 26 now. And I would like to show her when I was repping Apple, I was 24, 25, and I would like to sit down with her and show her an Apple III connected to a 300 baud modem and what that experience was like, because it was just, oh my God, was it horrible.
They wouldn't believe it. What we've been through, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but, you know, that's kind of like, you know, my grandmother telling us stories about having a party line when she was a kid and how she and her sisters used to go down and they'd pick up the phone and they'd listen to their neighbors talk until their their mom or dad came down and, you know, just read them the riot act. And anyway.
That's all right. They signed their terms of service. They knew it was going to happen. So.
Yeah, right, right.
Terms of service were shorter than you actually understood them.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, the terms of service, pick up the phone and we're going to slap you.
It works.
There you go.
So it turns out that this seems like a lot of money, but Apple App Store developers in 2014 earned $10 billion.
Oh, yeah.
Up 50%.
We earned a billion of that.
Wow. At HyperIC?
HyperIC.
BoozFeed.
BoozFeed,
baby.
BoozFeed Minneapolis.
That is a lot of money, dude. That's a lot of dough.
A lot of money.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
A lot of in-app purchases.
But at the same time, then everybody's, you know, pissing and moaning about digital rights management and which we'll talk about, you know, because the EFF, their new app is Android only, and the organization called out Apple for outrageous developer terms. And so I read the whole thing because I'm a huge EFF supporter. I mean, we donate to them every year, and then we keep donating more. And yet, you know, malware, excuse me, is more ubiquitous on Android by a huge margin. You know, something like 97% of all malware is on Android. So I understand openness, and I understand all of that, but at the same time, I know that, you know, it's just as the security guy, right? Don't have to deal with as much stuff on iOS.
As the designated Android guy on the group here.
Yes, Tim.
I have to say that as long as you get stuff within the Google Play Store or the Amazon App Store, you're fine. I mean, they do a good job.
Yeah, they do.
Of making sure that, you know, malware is out of the store. And if it is, it's taken out very quickly. Where you run into problems is when you pick up APKs, which are the packages that the apps are in, outside of these app stores, which you can do with Android.
Okay.
If you turn on, you have to opt into it. You have to say, okay, I want to install things from anywhere in the world. And once you opt out of their security model, then it's all bets are off.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's probably harder on Apple to do malware than it is on Android overall. But I've never had any problems with the Google Play Store ever.
That's great.
In that regard. So.
So the Apple's MacBook, 12-inch MacBook Air, is slated to come out and use that new connector. Right, there's a new USB Type C connector, does a lot, right? I mean, it's reversible. It's reversible, but doesn't the Type C allow you to do a lot of different things? Like, there's this rumor about this 12-inch MacBook Air said that there'll be one of these connectors in the device, and that it will. It also does power, 100 watts of power over this. But that, you can do mini display port out, you can do all this other stuff out of that one port. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there'll be lots of USB powered, docks that you'll be able to get for it. But
yeah, that's how you'll charge it.
Do you think this is realistic to have one port in a MacBook Air?
I'd like to have two, but, it doesn't look like there's a MagSafe connector on this thing either, which is kind of interesting.
So how are they going to plug the power in?
I guess you power it from the USB port?
USB. Yeah, that's how you're going to power it if this holds true. Yeah. But there's a headphone jack, right? Port, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
The thing that bothers me about this is that they're saying that the thing is going to be so thin that they can't even put a click in the trackpad.
What?
Yeah, that's one of the rumors that's so thin. So I'm thinking this thing, if it's that thin, it's going to be like you're going to be able to bend the darn
bend
thing.
It.
I would think. Yeah, it'll be just like.
Put it in your back pocket.
It'll be like Phil's iPhone 6.
Yeah. And if you have a hole in your
floor,
if you have a hole in your kitchen floor, don't walk around with your MacBook in your pocket.
That's bad.
Did Apple Care fix you up on that, Phil?
Yeah, just $84. Yeah.
Oh, that's great news.
So I had, I always buy it. So I always buy the Apple Care.
Oh, and that's why I could hear the sound of laughter coming from the Genius Bar way out here in Eden Prairie.
Yeah, they love that. But I have never really, I've never had a bad experience at the Genius Bar. So,
okay.
No, they're always good folks. They don't laugh at you openly.
No,
which is fine.
No.
They go in the back room later.
They go in that back room and go, look at this.
There's a guy shooting YouTube videos.
Exactly.
Oh man!
This new MacBook Air though, that's going to be my next one. I'm ready to retire my two and a half year old one. And Tim, when you brought up the clicker, I actually wore out my trackpad. I had to get a new one. They do break.
Wow!
I had to pay to get like $90, which they did pretty much within hours for me at the South or at not the Southdale store, at the Uptown store. And yeah, so no clicker won't bother me, but I definitely need to upgrade. I wish it was 13 inch instead of 12, but I guess we don't really know what they're going to introduce yet, do we? I
mean, it's not how big it is. It's how you use it, son.
It's the pixel density. So supposedly the pixel density is higher, so it'll actually look like you're seeing more in terms of screen real estate. But also, I got to tell you, Graham, once you start using a Retina display on a Mac, I mean, you'll never want to look at anything different.
I believe that. Yeah.
It really makes a huge difference.
Yep. It's really, in fact, a big pain in the butt when you're trying
to develop,
come up with the photo images.
I know. Yeah. You save it for web and devices and it looks great, but it's like 300 megabytes. Yeah,
right. Exactly.
I probably shouldn't put that on my home page.
Look at that. How slow that picture scrolls.
Yeah. On my new Doxis 3.1 gigabit per second down.
Look great.
Oh my God. Well, hey, all you guys are huge platform fans, right? I mean, you love, you know, WordPress is a platform for blogging and content management, and Phil, in your development, mobile app development, you guys use the platforms, right? I mean, PhoneGap, things like that.
No, we don't use PhoneGap. We develop native apps, dude.
It's native. So, custom, baby.
We don't use PhoneGap.
Okay.
We don't use any of that. We use
they're right to the metal.
Performance is much better on a native app. Always will be. Yep. So that's all there is to it.
I agree with you. Yep.
Well, so the rumor here in Recode is Amazon is secretly working on a new platform for inventors
They're calling it Fire.
Yeah, right. That's right. Developed for our phone. No, what is it?
I don't know.
Nobody knows.
It looks like it's another option to sell your products, but in a way that it will try to inspire startup companies to use Amazon as their e-commerce natively.
Well, so here's what somebody had speculated in a blog, and I'll see if I can find the post and link to it. But this guy's speculation, he's a mobile app developer. His speculation is that they were connecting prototyping and also connecting manufacturing supply chain stuff to this platform so that, if I create a product and I need a housing for it and I need a circuit board and I need a power supply and all of that, that I can pick and choose from a catalog of those services or those products and have stuff custom made. So I can get demos out. So I can go to CES, for example, and show stuff and see if anybody's interested. And if they are, I'll actually go build it. But do you think that? Yeah. Do you think that's where they're going to go with it?
I think this is just a souped up version of the George Foreman thing. So,
right,
guys, I can help you get your invention made. You know, that's
It has elements, though, of Kickstarter, too.
Yeah, this is going after the whole Kickstarter thing, the Indiegogo Kickstarter thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which has, become a huge deal, but why can't Amazon play there, I mean.
Yeah,
why not?
Huh. Okay. Well,
we're very excited about it, obviously.
Well, we're thinking of ideas.
I've got to get one of these keyboard waffle irons. Have you seen that? It's a story off to the right.
No.
It's a waffle iron that that will make waffles that look like keyboards.
I love that.
I'll stick it in the show notes.
I see it. Okay. Yes, I got it. Right. That could be your one cool thing.
It could be. Could be. If anyone needs a cool thing.
Jeez. Yeah, as soon as you start
it kind of looks like the waffle iron kind of looks like it's on an old Mac.
Yeah,
this plastic is like keyboard. Yeah,
this is like the old school.
I love it.
Wow. It's a Kickstarter.
Yeah, it's a Kickstarter, and you got to like waffles. So
indeed. Well, I think it's time to hear some horses.
Well, yes. I don't know if there's going to be, but what Tim is referring to, of course, is.
It is time for Steve's Security Tip of the Week.
All
No horses. They shoot horses, don't they?
Okay. All right.
That was good, though.
So, I want the horses back.
That was sinister.
So here's my security tip of the week.
This damn well better be sinister. That's all I can say.
Do not eat. Do not eat the super cookies.
No cookie.
And so, you know, it's great to have privacy mode or incognito mode in your browser, right? So you can go out and like Phil, surf all kinds of porn and not have it show up in your browser history. And I'm kidding. Right. Okay. Anyway, but
you hear me denying it? I don't know.
Yeah. But what super cookies are is that they, essentially they're the placement of them is abusing the, HTTP strict transport security feature, HSTS, which is only surprisingly not built into Microsoft's Internet Explorer. But essentially what it does is it puts a unique identifier in your browser that you can't get rid of. And you can test, I'll put a link in the show notes for testing your browser for it. And it turns out that iPad is a problem, iOS devices, because this can be, you know, it's persistent. You can't get rid of it. But the kicker is that I was trying it on the iPhone too, and it was not keeping the cookie. But this is something that's being developed. Supposedly no companies are using it yet, no major companies, but, these super cookies are just a unique identifier that will follow you wherever you browse. And there's no way to turn it off. There's no way to do a do not track. And, I'll also put a link in the show notes, to a solutions provider called Certona, who wrote a very interesting post about how, there's a lot of benefits to super cookies for omnichannel retailing. And that's why I mentioned this during the Target story, that this could be a good thing because there'd be a way to track people regardless of the device they're using, especially if you're on iOS and you're using iCloud, which I've turned off. But if you're using iCloud, it will then shift that transparent super cookie from device to device. So if I open up Safari on my Mac, the super cookie will follow me along. So how about that? Which is doesn't bother me because I'm using Chrome. So anyway, this is a story that I don't really have a fix for, other than if you're really freaked out about it, turn iCloud off. But just be aware that if you're going to nasty sites, even in privacy or incognito mode, that you can be tracked. You can be tracked if you're using a VPN. It doesn't matter. If you're using that browser, you can be tracked. Here's one thing that I will throw out if you're a Mac OS X user. There's an app called Fluid, and you can create a Safari-like browser. And I've got, you know, half a dozen of them. I've got one for Facebook so that Facebook can't track me everywhere. I've got another one for my Google Apps account. I just essentially run everything in that particular browser and keep the cookies separate from Safari. And so that's one option that you could use, or, you know, have Safari and Chrome and Firefox, on your system and then just use one for specific tasks. And so that's my tip of the week.
That's a biggie.
I miss the horses.
You miss what?
Horses. I miss the horses too.
Yeah, we miss the horses.
Okay.
Sorry. The horses could come back. Just saying.
They could. Well, you'll notice that I'm trying different things.
Yes.
For the intro.
Nice.
Yes. Well, you know, you're mixing it up.
Yeah. So we should do a Fonzie to introduce this next segment, the cool thing of the week.
Hey.
Yay. It's the cool, but we don't have horses for that though.
No. All right. So let's try mixing this up a little bit. Graham, you got to tell us about this Pono music player.
Oh yeah. I love
this. Yeah. So I, I went to a press event called Showstoppers, so I didn't have to go out and find their booth in the vast expanses of Las Vegas. I got to, having a press pass, I got to go with the other members of the press and see a selection of great products. And I went to this event thinking, I wonder if Neil Young might actually show up at this. No, he didn't. But nonetheless, I went and talked to the guys. It was a crowded little table, and they had a setup where you could actually listen to music on four or five of them set up there, and it was amazing. I'm telling you, I'm not particularly an audiophile or a digital audio, you know, geek, but you slap headphones on, hooked up to one of these, and you will be amazed. And guess which song I listened to? Neil Young.
Yeah.
Heart of Gold.
Heart of Gold. Oh. Right.
And you definitely notice a difference. And, you know, I'm not a huge music listener I like music, but I'm not listening to it all day long. I never really even bought my own iPod back in the day. But for $3.99, I mean, a lot of people were paying a lot more than $3.99 for their iPods, weren't they?
Oh, the first one, I think we paid $500 for it.
Yeah, yes, I mean, at $3.99, this thing is a bargain if you like music. I'm telling you, you will be amazed.
Well, you have to. What files does it play? It's not.
I don't know. I've got the
FLAC file, I believe. Yeah.
I think it's copy protected FLAC, and I forgot what they call it.
Yeah, well, apparently you can load it up with your favorite album at the highest quality released. And, I'm not sure about how all the mechanics of it work, but they just succeeded in shipping their, was it Kickstarter or Indiegogo, their first release. And I think they shipped, 15,000 of them or something like that.
Oh, wow.
And the VP of marketing guy I talked to, really nice guy. These are all old guys, by the way. These are not young kids. These guys are like Neil Young's age, you know, which whatever that is. These are like guys
70,
50s and 60s anyway that are running this company. And he said, there are a lot of people that were like mad that it was a week late or something like that. And I said, well, yeah, that's kind of how the Kickstarter thing goes, I guess. But when you spend $400, you want it on time, I suppose. But now you can buy them online via this site that's in the show notes, and they're saying February delivery.
Oh,
so
cool.
There you go.
Well, Neil Young, by the way, is 69.
Yeah. Well.
And, he's. But you know what else he's done that I think is just freaking awesome? I'll put a link in the show notes.
He's made
an electric car, but it's an old Lincoln.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
So.
That was biodiesel before.
I think that was what wasn't that a cool thing of the week a while back we did?
I think so.
And we also did a piece on the Pono Music Player back in March of 2014 as well. So we were talking about that. We were so cutting edge, Graham. You know,
it's nothing new, but it's out there now and it's available to the masses, I guess.
The one thing that the reason I think that it's an older group of guys putting this together or investors putting this together, this is a desire to what I've been sort of championing for such a long time is come on, you know, we're pretty technology savvy now. We could probably come up with a format that's much better than MP3. I mean, MP3 was designed so you could download music faster and play music easier because of limited bandwidth. With more and more bandwidth, I mean, good Lord, that music is that is just to compressed to within an inch of its life. So I'm not necessarily an impractical person, but I've really started thinking about, I'm going to go out and get a turntable and start buying vinyl again. Cause
it's coming back.
It's just so god awful sounding, especially when you're listening in your car. You know, I hook up my iTunes and listen in the car sometimes. It's just, oh my God, it's so bad.
Well, and you know, it's really hard to listen to vinyl in your car though. That's the only,
I know that's true. But you get one of those, you hang it by a chain from the roof.
That's right.
Self-driving. And it swings, you know, as you go.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
I love how Pono or Pono. Do you say Pono or Pono?
It's Pono.
It's Pono. Pono. I think it's Pono. Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds Hawaiian. Better. But the way they sell it is feel the music again.
Yeah.
Music is all about how it makes you feel when you hear it.
Yep.
So, you know, that's what they're selling. And by God, I'm telling you, you gotta hear one.
Are you buying one, Graham?
I just reward myself with a toy. Yeah. You know, since I'll be holding off waiting for the 12-inch Air Retina till it's out later in the year. Yeah, maybe, just maybe I will.
Maybe you will. So there.
And then I'll impress everybody at Coco, huh? I mean, have you seen one at Coco yet?
No, I have not.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll be first.
You may be first.
Awesome. Phil, what's your deal?
Well, your cool thing. I just kind of kicking it old school here and, you know, supporting the local community by, you know, highlighting the Polaroid Socialmatic camera.
This looks fun.
Doesn't it?
Looks like an Instagram icon.
Yeah, it does.
But it also prints the photo. They also have really cool, custom leather case for it.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of cool. You know, kind of a retro.
Right.
Leather case.
And these also use their zinc printer technology as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So I thought it was kind of cool. It completely impractical.
Yeah.
Completely. Did they license this from Instagram, or is this just,
well, you could only hope they did.
Inspired by Instagram. Cause it looks almost exactly the same.
It looks like the icon. Yeah.
I smell a lawsuit coming.
Yeah.
Polaroid better get their lawyers.
Polaroid. It's only $299 at Amazon. So
this will be the first camera that'll support Facebook.
And though it is my, you know, cool thing of the week, I still think I'd invest in a photo player first.
Hey, and it's running full fledged Android. So you can run Instagram on it.
There you go.
Crazy.
Cool.
It's crazy is what it is.
It's crazy.
High tech, man.
Well, Tim, what crazy cool thing do you have?
Well, I'm kicking it back to the CES here, and it's a Seagate's new personal cloud drive, which is $170 for 3 terabytes, which in and of itself is cool, but that's not all. It also runs Plex.
There's more,
and it runs Plex Media Server, which makes this ridiculously a good deal.
Yeah, because you can throw all your videos on there, and the Plex media player is, the server is really, really well done.
Yep. It's a way that we watch stuff here.
Yeah. And, yeah. Well, I used to when I had a Mac Mini hooked up, but now I'm thinking about buying one of those HP $179 hockey puck PCs and use that and put Plex on it. But anyway.
So is this available for purchase?
I don't think so. I think it was just announced this week, but it will be soon.
This has a Minnesota tie-in in a way, too. You know, Seagate's one of the largest high-tech employers in Minnesota.
That's right. And they're expanding their Edina facility.
Are they really?
Yeah,
I wonder what they're doing over there.
They tore some buildings down. And, well, you know, I have no idea, but my conjecture is that we're going to see a gigantic shift this year in spinning Winchester hard drives moving to SSDs, solid-state drives, because the price per megabyte is falling, and I'm not exactly sure when the elasticity of demand will kick in and people will say, you know, for a $20 premium, I'm going to get something that's, you know, 50 times faster. You know, the durability of SSDs has been shown. So I think that maybe they're building a fab plant there where they're going to be able to crank out solid state storage.
You would think they'd be gearing up to do that. That is for sure.
Yeah.
We owners of MacBook Airs have been enjoying SSDs for quite a while now, and it's definitely where things are going.
Well, and I can't wait until I get my new iMac with that 1 terabyte SSD and
how
that's going to change my life.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Speaking of SSDs and CES, I was really impressed with Samsung's announcement of the SSD T1, and I'll put a link in the show notes and you can see the size of it in this guy's hand, and it's just a little bit bigger than it's probably about the size of a credit card. Now, of course, it's thicker, but you can get it in 256, 512, and up to a terabyte, and it'll range in price from $179 to $500.
So you obviously stayed awake long enough during that press conference to see this.
They didn't talk about it during that event.
Yeah. Of course not.
So But I thought this was really awesome because you know what? It's once you really started, like you said, Graham, started to use SSDs, you know, my iMac with a spinning Winchester takes sometimes up to 3 minutes to load everything and get everything up and running and so on. My MacBook Pro with an SSD takes 25 to 30 seconds and everything is up.
Yep.
I mean, it's just night and day.
Yep.
Because on my iMac, sometimes I'll say, nah, I'm not going to do that install right now because I have to do a restart, you know, and it'll kill 5 to 7 minutes, you know, to shut everything down and restart. And with an SSD, it's like, whatever, boom, restart, and done. So,
yep. This is a great looking product. Great looking site they have too.
Good stuff.
Showing it off. Wow.
This week.
Well, anything that we should talk about?
Upcoming events?
That Technovation event that I did a post on Minovate. Yes. And I'll put that in the new upcoming events. But Technovation's having this App Day adventure.
App Day is tomorrow.
On January 11th. Yep.
It's the last App Day before the beginning of the Technovation Challenge, which is the national event where teams work with mentors to develop, teams of young women develop mobile applications. And they'll do everything from business plans to marketing. And then they'll pitch them. And then, you know, winners will, or actually everything will be submitted to the national contest. So
yep.
It's a lot of fun. I think they are full as far as mentors go. I think they are full as far as teams go, but there will be some all sorts of good things to for the girls to participate in as the 12-week challenge goes on.
Yep. So, well, maybe
looking forward to it.
Maybe next year they'll give me a heads up earlier than 3 days before the event.
Well, we were talking about, you know, actually, you know, App Day is we've had 2 or 3 App Days, so
right.
It's nothing you should be worried about there, Steve. I'm sorry.
Okay, Phil.
You didn't know fast enough.
Is that a virtual hug?
That's a virtual hug.
Okay, just checking.
It's a virtual hug. Feeling the love, brother.
All right.
So what else has happened? Lots of stuff going on.
Well, there's this one that we haven't talked about, which Game is coming Craft. Up at the end of the month. Yeah, GameCraft, which is at the U of M, and it's like a 48-hour game hackathon, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And they're going to do it. They're going to try and do it Mountain Dew free.
Really?
No way. No way.
It looks like you can take naps though. So this is not like the website challenge.
Oh, come on. You take naps all the time at the website challenge.
Yes, right?
Naps are my job. What are you talking about?
But it's not recommended, let me tell you.
So that's happening.
No. That's interesting, yeah.
And then the first week of February, a couple of good ones with How Data Science Leads to I Do over at the Carlson School, the mini analytics event,
right,
with a great panel of experts on how data can actually, or how the whole, you know, online dating thing works and how you can actually hack that data. The one guy that hacked the OkCupid is going to be on the panel and met his wife that way. So that'll be interesting. And then mini demo follows 2 days later.
Yes,
at the Guthrie. It's going to big time venues here.
Do we have any demos announced yet, guys?
Not yet.
I doubt it.
Nope.
No, not seen anything.
Yep.
They don't do that till really, really late.
Yep.
Week or two in advance. Yes. It seems like
it's always a good time.
Yep. So the 27th of January at 2:30 p.m. will be the first round of tickets released. And then they'll do again on the 2nd of February, but
or become a community supporter and not go through all
that's things. Exactly right.
Which is what I do.
Yep. Same here.
Yep.
Cool. Did you put this the Hennepin County geocode thing, Steve?
I did not. Oh. No, who did?
I did.
Okay, cool. Very nice.
Yeah. It's yet another thing.
A little coding thing. Very cool.
Yep.
Mobile March is set for the 26th of March. We have 3 keynotes planned.
Nice.
We'll be announcing our keynotes this week.
And then the Internet of Things IoT Fuse is on the 19th.
Right.
And that'll be, you know, Internet of Things.
Where are they doing that, Steve?
That'll be at Keller Hall at the University of Minnesota.
Oh, I don't know that hall.
Yeah, it's one of the main, you know, technical engineering, electrical engineering.
Oh, in the engineering buildings. Yeah. Okay.
It's got a big tinfoil hat on the top of it.
Oh, that one.
It does. It does.
So, Steve, are you bringing your Zippo lighter for this since it's a fuse event?
actually, no, I invited my pal Tom Cruise to come in and, do the opening of Mission Impossible.
There you go.
Yeah. You're good friend, Tom Cruise.
Sure. Right, hey, who do you think taught him to jump on the sofa on the Oprah Winfrey show?
Hey, he has a Minnesota connection. You know, there were rumors for a long time, and I think they were true, that he had a lake place up on the Whitefish chain.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Huh. Yeah, I don't know if he still does, but oh, yeah.
I'll be go to hell.
There you go, baby.
Interesting.
Tom Cruise in Minnesota.
Well, I want to thank everyone for carving out some time to listen to our podcast, and
there'll be lots of things to talk about next week on
the Men of 8 Gang podcast.
Yes, there will.
Take care.
Have a good week.
See you guys.